the 9th?
Today yes. is the yes. 9th, and next week is the 16th. And that's it.
Anyway, let's see
how much we can do. We may do it a little bit more kind of overview style rather than in depth. My goal was to finish this middle unit of the division of Israel, which is really the one unit that we were going to look at sort of from a bird's eye view anyway. And if we can finish it, then I know that we've sort of covered the bulk of the Sefer. In the next year, as we start Shoftim, we'll start with the postscript of the end of Yehoshua first as an introduction. But we were in the middle of chapter 17 last week, and I believe we got up to the... We almost got up to 18. I don't know if we read... We got the end of chapter 17 where there was a little dialogue we didn't get up to, which is Sukkim Yudalad to the end. Pasuk Yudalad. Vayedabru b'nei Yosef et Yehoshua lemor. B'nei Yosef come to Yehoshua with a challenge. Madu natata li nachala goral echad vechevel echad, v'ani am rav ad asher ad ko berchani Hashem. Why have you given me only one portion when I am such a great multitude? For God has blessed me so. Right? In other words, Yehoshua is dividing up the land according to each tribe, and Bnei Yosef come to him with a complaint. The Nachla of Bnei Yosef is Menashe and Ephraim, and if you have the charts that I gave you last week, this one is probably the easiest one to work with because that's a repeat of that one. You have it?
I didn't get one. I wasn't here last week.
Ooh. I don't know what happened to the extra.
Well, don't worry, I'll shake them out.
You have to look at it. And if you take a look at the division of the... This one is actually good because it looks very similar to the big one, but it's first of all in English, and second of all, you have it in front of you. If you look right in the middle, you see where Yerushalayim is. It's called Yevus. You see Jebus? That's Yerushalayim. North of Yerushalayim is Binyamin. We'll talk about Binyamin next week. And north of Binyamin is Ephraim, with Shiloh in the middle. And north of that is Menashe. Menashe, of course, covers both sides of the Jordan because you have Menashe East, which is the Gilad, and Menashe West, which is the tribe that's divided up here. So from just north, from Beit El, all the way up to Emek Yisrael, where it says Yisachar. Do you see that? Right below the word Yisachar is Jezreel. All of that is the area given to Ephraim and Menashe. When you think about it,
it's a lot.
It's a very large piece of land. And they come to Yehoshua, and they complain. Why have you given us only one portion and one piece of land? We are so great, so large. Ad asher ko berchani Hashem. So Yehoshua responds to them. Vayomer alehem Yehoshua. Im am rav ata. If you're so many, I'll give you a solution. Ale lecha hayara. Go up to the, what's a ya'ar?
Forest.
Yar is a forest. We're going to fine-tune that in a moment. Yar today is called a forest. I'm not sure in the time of Tanakh a Yar was a forest.
But they weren't have so many trees.
Well, we'll come back to that question. I think we touched on this a little bit 2 years ago when we talked about the splitting of the sea.
For sure all of us remembered that.
Lucky I remembered what I covered. But
Dina.
So's the rabbi.
Uvereta lecha sham be'eretz haprizi v'harefaim. Ki atz lecha harefaim. Go up to the yar and clear the land. Uvereta lecha sham be'eretz haprizi v'harefaim. Take the land of the prizi and the refaim. We'll talk about which land this is in a minute. Because atz lecha harefaim. Because Har Ephraim is too small for you.
If it doesn't work for you, so here's, go up to the Ya'ar and clear the forest. Go clear the trees. Go clear the swamps. Go bring in, you know, do what you need to do. But don't complain to me. Vayamru b'nei Yosef, to which b'nei Yosef responded and said, Lo yimatzeh lanu ha'har, we can't do it in the mountains. V'rechev barzel b'chol ha'knani yoshev be'eretz ha'emek. And there's too many Canaanites with chariots and horses in the valley. L'asher b'Beit Shan uvnoteha, in the area of Emek Beit Shan and Emek Israel, we have a problem. We can't get past the chariots. V'yomer Yeshua Beit Yosef l'Ephraim b'li Menashe l'mor. So Yeshua says to the house of Joseph, Ephraim and Menashe, Am Rav Ata, you are a great nation, a great multitude. V'koach gadol lach, you have great strength. Lo yelach agoral achad, you won't have just one portion. Ki har yelach, ki ya'ahu, you have a mountain, which is a forest. Uvereto, clear it. V'ayalach atotzotav, and you'll have its borders and boundaries. Ki torish atakna'ani, ki recha bazelo, ki chazaku, and you will conquer the Canaanites, for they have chariots and horses, and they are strong. You figure out what this dialogue is about. This dialogue from a sequential point of view makes no sense. Why not?
I don't understand. He's telling them that they're large and that they can conquer the Canaanites. I mean, why wouldn't that make sense?
He's mixed two issues here. When they first come to him and they say, there's not enough space on this land. So he says to them, go to the forest. You want space? Go clear the forest. Then B'nai Yosef said, in response to whether in response or not in response, I don't know, but then B'nai Yosef said, notice there's the beginning of this section he's talking to. B'nai Yosef come to him and they said, well, what do we do? So he says, go into Har Ephraim is too small, go to the Ya'ar. To which B'nai Yosef then says, we can't conquer the chariots and horses. What chariots and horses are in the forest?
They're not.
Canaanites are in the valleys. We're saying going to the forest. And they say, Atzach Har Ephraim. And they say, well, we can't get to the chariots and the horses in the valley. So he says, well, you're an Amrav. Therefore, go clear the forest.
Right, doesn't seem like the question.
Doesn't seem like the answers answer the question, right?
The dialogues
are completely disconnected. Asks him about apples and he answers him with oranges.
Are there two different subjects?
Oh, so the one possibility is that there's two different subjects and there's actually two different dialogues. And that they may be happening in parallel. And that the two parallel dialogues are actually a question of two different groups within B'nai Yosef. Remember that B'nai Yosef is a conglomerate of two tribes. The issues that Ephraim has and the issue that Menashe has are not necessarily the same. When they come to Yeshua initially, it's B'nai Yosef. They said, we're too many, we can't handle it here, we need to go somewhere else. So he says, well, go to the forest and clear the forest because you can't, there's too much space, not enough space for you in Har Ephraim. Har Ephraim is a very small region, relatively speaking. It's at the center of, it runs from north of Beit El, around the area of Shiloh and Shechem. And by and of itself, Menashe has no business in Har Ephraim. What issue does Menashe have with Har Ephraim? Har Ephraim is an Ephraim issue. That's what's called Har Ephraim. The issues of Emek Beit Shan and Emek Israel and the chariots and the Canaanites there is a Menashe issue. It's irrelevant to Ephraim, who are nowhere near the Canaanites. They're in the mountains. They're in Har Ephraim. So it doesn't make any sense for B'nai Yosef as a group to be complaining about Har Ephraim and Beit Shan, Emek Beit Shan, the Canaanites in Emek Beit Shan and Emek Israel, Right, these are two different issues, one for Ephraim and one for Menashe. It is true that they come to Yehoshua
supporting
each other. They probably come to him together. And the opening statement is, because the chapter describes how Goral Mateh B'nei Yosef, that B'nei Yosef were divided from the initial boundary and then subdivided between Ephraim and Menashe. So they looked at it like one Nachla of B'nei Yosef. So he comes to him and he says, we are a great multitude, especially because we're really two tribes, Ephraim and Menashe combined together. If we're two tribes, we have a challenge. And there's two separate challenges here, to which Yehoshua, in a certain sense, responds to each in kind. To each in kind. The question is, what's the challenge, and what is Yehoshua's response? First of all, the challenge is, what is Ephraim's challenge?
They don't have enough space.
They are an Amrav, and because they are an Amrav, the space of Har Ephraim is too small for them. To which Yehoshua answers,
clear the forest.
Clear the forest. Which forest? Oh.
They didn't say that.
That's a good question. Right? Which forest?
Right. They didn't say that.
There's a number of ways to read this. At the superficial level, we'll qualify this in a moment, but at one level you could say the forest is simply that part of Har Ephraim that is uninhabited, it's all forest, and they're complaining there's not enough land, so he says to them, what's your problem? Go clear the trees, and you'll have, invite a couple of hurricanes, and clear the trees for you. Go clear the trees, and you'll have lots of space, and then you'll be able to settle. What's the problem? That's on one level. I think there's an additional level here, and we'll come back to it in a moment. But assuming for a moment, he says, Alelecha hayara, go to the forest. And we'll see where this ya'ar is in a moment. If atzlecha har Ephraim, if har Ephraim is too small for you, so here's the ya'ar available to you. What's Menashe's issue?
The Canaanites.
The Canaanites. And what's his answer to Menashe? Am rav ata. You're a great multitude. Koach gadolach. You have a lot of strength. Lo yelecha goral achad, ki ha yelach ki yarhu uvereto, ve'yalecha totzotad ki torishta knani. You're a great multitude. You'll have more than one nachala. You'll take the ya'ar, and you'll clear the Canaanites. What does the ya'ar have to do with the Canaanites?
That's two separate issues.
He's going back to the first issue. And now we're into issue number two. Issue number two is?
Well, can the Yar be used as a defense? I mean, do they use it in
the Yar cannot be used as a defense, and nor can it be used as any kind of relevant answer to
the
question of Emek Bechan and Emek Yisrael. As I'll show you in a moment, the Yar is in a completely different geographic location. Right. So, on the one hand, so what's the key phrase here? What's the key phrase here? Well, what's the milat mancha, as they call it, the guiding phrase?
You're a great force.
Am rav ata, right? Am rav ata.
Which
is repeated a few times.
But so
they say it.
Clear the forest,
am
clear
rav.
The forest.
We are an am rav. And Yeshua answers, am rav. If you're a great people, then go clear the forest. Then Menashe complains about the emek, about the rechav of Barzel. To which Yeshua again says, Am Rav Ata.
That's the answer.
Meaning?
You're a great nation.
And therefore?
You should be able to handle.
Grow up.
But it's, and it says
you've got a problem, deal with it.
It says,
Koach Gadolecha. In other words, the question that Ephraim posed was, we're such a great number, we can't handle this space. The question that Menashe posed was, how do we deal with the chariots and the horses? So Yeshua says to one, and he looks at the other, and he says,
Your problem is your solution.
Your problem is your solution. I'm Rav Ata, so go deal with the chariots and the horses. How do the chariots and the horses become an issue? The chariots and horses became an issue. Emek Yisrael, I understand. Emek Yisrael is north of them. It's the valley right above them. Emek Beit Shan is east of them. How did Emek Beit Shan enter into, you know where Emek Beit Shan is? Mm-hmm. Right? It's the
from this map.
Comes around here. Emek Beit Shan. You see this yellow area?
Where it says Beit Shan on this map.
Where it says Beit Shan, right? You see the yellow area? Because the yellow area is Canaanite. They never get to it. They never conquer it.
So Emek Beit Shan and Emek Yisrael are the two Canaanite regions because that's where the chariots can function in the valleys. And those are the areas that Ephraim and Manasseh can't get to.
Is that the same Beit Shan Valley today?
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly where Emek Beit Shan is today. By the way, the fact that they are... let's hand out this source page. The fact that Ephraim and Manasseh are complaining about the fact that they are so great...
We had this last week.
Did you? I wasn't sure if I gave this to you last week or not.
This is the one from last week.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This is last week.
We didn't use it last week, so I guess I just made extra copies.
Can I just ask you a little off the topic, but it's kind of connected. Mm. I just heard this last time. That in Eilat, they don't keep Shemitah.
There's a major dispute, lahalacha, whether Eilat is part of the land of Israel.
The borders according to Yoshua?
The borders are more complicated than that because the borders go through several cycles.
Right.
The borders are part of start with the biblical borders of Israel, which may not include Eilat. The biblical borders of the land of Israel go down to Kadesh Barnea. It's not clear that they go down to Eilat. It's not the full answer. The halachic issue revolves around, it's not clear that they don't keep Shemitah either. It depends where. And it depends whom. Because the halachic issues related to Shemitah go by several issues. Number one, the biblical boundaries of the land of Israel, which may or may not include Eilat. It's a question of how you interpret the phrase Etzion Gaver, which is what the port that Shlomo HaMelech builds. Number two, the Gemara says that all of the land of Israel after the exile and conquest of land of Nebuchadnezzar lost its sanctity, and it's only the second sanctity established by Ole Bavel that maintains its sanctity till today. That's the Pesach Halacha of the Rambam. And there, it depends where the exiles from Bavel return to. So any region in which the exiles from Bavel did not settle in the Second Temple period would not have been re-sanctified, and therefore suffix as to whether or not today we could re-sanctify them in terms of Shemitah. So that's a completely different issue.
But it's not the modern borders. It's not Shemitah.
It's got nothing to do with the political borders of the land of Israel. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the political borders of the land of Israel at the time of Bavel, at the time of Shivat Zion. And whether or not it went down to Eilat, in which case, if it didn't, then it probably tackled same shaila about Gaza Strip. There are many who held that the Gaza Strip did not include the laws of Shemitah because of the same suffix.
Why would Shemitah?
Can I ask a different question also?
But let's go back to this issue. Let's go back to this issue.
I always ask before I go into a sermon. I just wanted to know what she was doing.
Okay.
Sorry. Let's go back to this issue for a moment. So Yoshua is faced with the question of Ephraim and their size and multitude. What I was going to say to you, I'll come back to your question in a second, was that the notion that Ephraim is a large number, Ephraim are a significant number in terms of the size of the Shevet, is actually goes all the way back to the brachos that Yaakov and Moshe give to Bnei Yosef. Both brachos, both by Moshe and by Yaakov, give a bracha to Yosef that is a bracha of size and puravu. Of all the tribes of Israel, they are the ones for whom the bracha initially, Yosef, together.
Is my question. Is that the reason why Manasseh is so much bigger than Ephraim?
No, Manasseh and Ephraim go together.
But if you look at it, where it says Manasseh, where it says Ephraim, they're really the
territorially. Yeah. No, I think the Manasseh it looks bigger on the map only because he includes the eastern side of the Gilad. Ephraim is I don't think territorially Manasseh is much bigger than Ephraim.
Okay.
But the bracha to Moshe and Yaakov of Yaakov and Moshe to Ephraim in both cases includes the bracha Puravu, which is interesting that here, years later, Yoshua comes, the Bnei Yosef come to Yoshua with the complaint of Amrav.
Anachnu.
So just briefly, I'll show you the two brachas I put side by side so you could see it. In Breshit Memtet, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Alei Ayin, if you take a look at Pasuk Chaf Hey, Me'alavicha v'yazreka v'et shatai v'archeka b'chot shamayim ma'al b'chot tahom revetza tachat b'chot shadayim v'racham. What's b'chot shadayim v'racham? He's blessing him with dew, he's blessing him with produce, and then he's blessing him with b'chot shadayim v'racham.
Racham
is rechem, is the womb. And shadayim are breasts, meaning the blessing of nursing. In other words, that's the poetic blessing of pruvu. In Moshe's bracha, Moshe starts the same way. LiYosef amar mevrechet Hashem arzomi meged shamayim mital mitohom vetzatachat. He gives him the bracha of tal and produce, and then at the end, the last pasuk. Vehem rivavot Ephraim, vehem alfei Menashe. The multitudes and myriads of Ephraim and Menashe. So both Yaakov and Moshe give Yosef, give this bracha of Purvu, and the multiplicity, the size, not to mention the fact that Yosef is the only Shevet that gets split into two and gets an equal Nachla for each of his two sons. So it's actually double the size of any other shevet. So the mystery to all of this, I think, can be solved if we know where Yair Ephraim is. Why is he talking to about Emek Beit Shan and Emek Yisrael, and why is he talking about Rechev and Bazel? How did all of this enter into the discussion about Nachla? I think the answer lies in an understanding of where Yair Ephraim is. Right, so I want to take you on a brief journey as to where Yair Ephraim is. First of all, what's the only indication in this text as to where the land of Yair, which forest we're talking about?
You just read it.
Yeah. What's the indication of which geographically where this Yair is in the text? How do I know which Yair we're talking about?
Prizi and Rephaim.
Mm-hmm. Eretz HaPrizi VaHaRephaim. Eretz HaPrizi VaHaRephaim, where do the Rephaim live? What is the land of the Rephaim? So that's the irony. The land of the Rephaim is the land of the Gilad. Which is a very strange place to put Shevet Ephraim. Correct? Turn to Shmuel Bet. Into Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Chet. Beginning of Perek Yud Chet, just to give you a context, we're talking about the battle of the rebellion of Avshalom. I don't know where you're up to in your study of Sefer Shmuel.
I knew it was next to me, I couldn't figure it out.
Okay. I don't know, where are you up to in your study of Shmuel Bet?
We're not up to this yet.
No.
We're not up to this yet.
Where are you?
Of course.
Right. So where have you gotten up to?
I'm trying to think.
We're
Have you gotten past the story of David and Bathsheba?
No.
No, we're not there.
We're approaching.
We're close
okay.
to that.
We're just about there.
Yeah.
The story of David and Bathsheba is a turning point in Sefer Shmuel. It's a turning point in David Melech's life. And
we didn't get that part yet.
Okay. No, it's
that's the part I'll come from.
The second half of Shmuel Bet,
right.
Everything that happens in the second half of Shmuel Bet is the aftermath of David and Bathsheba. And
as a result of?
It's not so much a result of, but is overshadowed by. So the second half of David's career is in shambles because of it, and there's much to be said about it, but that's not a topic for today. But there's a rebellion. First of all, there's the story of Amnon and Tamar, which is a horrible story of the rape of a sister, and all related to the aftermath of David and Bathsheba. Then there's the rebellion of the murder of Amnon and by his brother. And then the rebellion of Avshalom against his father for not doing anything about the story of Amnon and Tamar. Everything sort of snowballing one thing after another. But in that context is the rebellion of Avshalom, one of the sons of David, who rebels against David, tries to kill him, tries to take over the kingdom. Avshalom is a very famous story because he has long hair, and the story of Avshalom's death is that he gets caught in the forest by his hair and gets killed that way. But what ensues is a major battle. It's a war. It's a civil war between the forces of David and the followers of Avshalom. That battle is described in Perek Yudchet. And if you take a look at it, Vayomer Alehem HaMelech, starting with Pasuk Dalet, ויאמר אליהם המלך אשר איתה ביניכם אעשה ויעמוד המלך היד השער וכל העם יצאו למאות ואלפים. This battle has grown to include hundreds and thousands. ויצב המלך את יואב ואת אבישי ואת איתי לאמור לאט לי לנער אבשלום וכל העם שמעו בצוות המלך את כל הסרים על דבר אבשלום. They're beginning the campaign. David is worried about אבשלום. Pasuk Vav, Vayetze Ha'am Hasadeh Likrat Yisrael. The people go out to field to fight this battle. Vatehi Hamilchama B'Ya'ar Ephraim. This battle takes place in an area called Ya'ar Ephraim. Vayinagfu Shem Am Yisrael Lifnei Avdei David. Am Yisrael are the followers of Avshalom. They fall before the forces of David. Vatehi Hamilchama נפוצת על פני כל הארץ וירב היער לאכול בעם מאשר אוכלה החרב ביום ההוא. Were more people consumed by the forest than consumed by the sword in that battle. How do people get consumed by a forest?
Wild animals.
Wild animals.
Oh.
Right? Beasts, lions, tigers, leopards, whatever it is, bears. They get mauled by the animals that get destroyed. Or they get lost, but unlike, if you get lost in Yair Yerushalayim, you're not going to let an army of people get destroyed because they got lost in Yair Yerushalayim. It's not going to happen. Okay, and within a couple of hours, you'll find your way out of Yair Yerushalayim. Okay, it's not that big. In order for you to have literally tens of thousands killed by the forest of Yair Ephraim, you have to assume two things. Number one, that this forest is far larger than what we would otherwise imagine. And number two, that the forest is essentially a place of
wild
beasts. Wild beasts don't settle in forests.
So maybe it's really not a forest.
Wild beasts settle in. You have a forest with a lot of wild beasts. What do you have?
Jungle.
You have a jungle.
So it's not a forest?
A jungle is a much bigger place than a forest.
Right.
You can have 30 trees and have a forest. You can't have 30 trees and have a jungle. You need a much larger region, and you need a region that has much more water than can be supplied by to a forest. A forest can be supplied by rain. A jungle needs much greater amount of water. We had that discussion when we talked about the size of the Jordan River when they crossed it. Because Yair Ephraim is the forest or the jungle supported by the waters of the Jordan River. So my question to you is, where is this Yair Ephraim? Here it doesn't tell us where it is. It just tells us what's going on in Yarra Ephraim. So you see how dense the trees are and how big the forest is. We're talking about hundreds of years later, and it's still large enough to destroy an army. Agreed?
Yeah.
So if you want to know where it is now, go back a little bit into the end of chapter 17, when the preparation for this battle takes place.
Back
to Pasuk of Dalet, where are the armies encamping in preparation for this battle? V'David ba Pasuk of Dalet, V'David ba Machanaima, V'Avshalom avar at Hayarden hu v'chol ish Yisrael imo. Pasuk Yudchavav, V'yichan Yisrael v'Avshalom eretz Hagilad. V'hikivol David Machanaima, etc., etc., etc. What are the names of the places where this battle is taking place? East side of the Jordan, in the area of Machanaim, and the Gilad. So on your map, actually, you have the maps in front of you. You have your map. If you cross over the Jordan, do you see an area called Yavesh Gilad? Beneath it is a river that runs east-west from the Jordan River, a place called Adam. You see it on the map?
Mm-hmm.
That river runs across, you see the area of Sukkot?
No, I don't see what you're talking about.
This river here. That cuts right across the center of the area of the Gilad.
Okay? That divides the land. The south of it is Gad, north of it is Menasha. Do you see that river?
Mm-hmm.
That river is called the Yabok. Yabok is famous for which story?
We've heard us.
Correct. Yabok is famous for the story of? Yaakov and Esav. That's the river that Yaakov crosses with his family when he struggles with the angel of Esav on his return from the house of Laban. Nachal Yabok, in that story of Yaakov and the angel, before he struggles with Esav, he gets to that place and he sees Vayivgu'u bo malachei elokim on his way home. Correct. He calls and he sees the camp of the angels. And he calls the place the double camp. That's when he crosses over the Yabok and he's heading to the land of Israel. That's the Yabok River. Machanaim is on the banks of the Yabok River. That's the place where David and Avshalom are preparing their armies for battle, which will take place inside Yarra Ephraim. Why is all of this relevant? To answer one question: which side of the Jordan is Yarra Ephraim on?
On the east.
But where, it's near Sukkot and Yabok? That's what I don't understand. Where's Yabok? I see where Sukkot is, but where's
Yabok? Yabok is the name of the river.
I know, so where is...
It's not on. It doesn't say that on the map. That's why I was giving you other places. But Yabok is the name of the river. It's on that map, but you can't see it from here. But the... But Yarra Ephraim is in the east side of the Jordan. That's the key here. Why is that the key? Because if Yarra Ephraim is on the east side of the river, it's misnamed. Not in Ephraim. It's in Shevet.
Menasha.
It's on the east side of Menasha.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's go back to the dialogue with Yeshua. What's going on here? Bnei Ephraim, Bnei Yosef come to Yeshua.
About clearing the forest, then does that make sense? The whole discussion doesn't make sense.
So now let's go back to the discussion, and now
it doesn't make sense.
It will make more sense.
Okay.
Now let's go back to the discussion. And with this piece of information now, we can begin to understand the story. And it has a whole new significance. It'll have historical significance now. Bnei Yosef come to Yeshua and they said, why have you given us one goral? One goral means that in the context of the chapters that we've read, they've divided up the west side of the Jordan. Right? The east side was done already. Gilad belongs to Menashe. Gad and Reuven share the area between the Yabok and the Arnon. And the land of Gilad, here's the land of Gilad, goes from the Yabok all the way into the Bashan. This is all Menasha, territorially.
conquered only this area, but this is all Menashe, the Chabot Deir. Yabok to Arnon here is Reuben and Gad, north of it's Menashe.
West of the Jordan, Bnei Yosef come to him and said, "Madu natatuli nachala goral achad v'chevel achad v'ani amra v'asherad koy v'chani Hashem." We are such a great multitude, Ephraim and Manasseh. This land of Har Ephraim, which is a mountain range, is not big enough for us. Vayomri Yoshua im rav am rav ata. If you are such a great multitude, and Har Ephraim im atzlacha Har Ephraim, if Har Ephraim is not big enough for you, I'll give you an Eitza, namely, Alelecha Hayara, Uveratalecha Sham Be'eretz HaPrizi V'Hadafaim, and go clear the forest of the in the area of Eretz HaPrizi V'Harefaim. Which side of the Jordan River is this Ya'ar that Yeshua has just given Bnei Ephraim?
On the east.
East. In other words, what Yeshua does is very simple. He took a section of land that was territorially in the region of the Gilad, Eretz HaPrizi V'Harefaim, and that territorially belonged to Manasseh, but that was all forest and all jungle, and nobody was living there, and nobody was settling there. Manasseh wasn't going to miss it. And he said to Ephraim, if you're not enough land in Eretz Ephraim, I'll give you another swath of land, namely, in the area of the Gilad. Go ahead.
Split up.
I'll split you up. Manasseh already split up. I'll take if whoever can't make it, imatzlecha har Ephraim, so go take your people and go settle in the forest area of the Gilad. Nobody's there anyway. Clear the trees, and you can have that. Right? Not a problem. To which their response was, lo yimatzel lanu ha'har v'rechav bazel b'chol haknani yoshe be'eretz ha'emek la'asher b'veit shanu v'noteu la'asher la'emek b'Yisrael. Now we have a new problem. Namely, the chariots to the north and east of us. Why are the chariots to the north and east of us a problem? Because in order to get from Har Ephraim to the forest of Ya'ar Ephraim in the area of the Gilad, what do you have to cross? To go from Har Ephraim eastward to the area of Ya'ar Ephraim, which is now east of the Jordan, what do you have to cross?
The river.
Besides the river, you have to cross the valley. And to cross the valley, you have to cross the area of Emek Beit Shan. To get across Emek Beit Shan, you've got the chariots. So the response is to them, that's very nice. You've given us a wonderful area, but we can't get there. Because to get there, we've got to cross the territory of the chariots and of the Canaanites. Yeshua looks at him and he says, I don't get it. On the one hand, you complain that you have too many people, you can't settle in Har Ephraim. Then you can't deal with a couple of chariots sitting in Emek Beit Shan. Go deal with the chariots and then go settle in Har Ephraim.
But the Canaanites were very strong.
Correct. And Yeshua was not impressed at the complaint that the Canaanites were very strong. In fact, that's the source of the problem. Yeshua is constantly, now you begin to understand the crux of the problem. The people are complaining that there's too many horses and chariots, and Yeshua is looking at them and saying, guys, that's what you're here for. Go deal with it. Go do what you're supposed to do. Don't complain to me that there's too many chariots and therefore you got to go elsewhere. That's what you're here for. You want to complain to me you're too many people for Har Ephraim and I'll give you the land of the Har Ephraim east of the Jordan because of the hate. But then don't complain to me about horses and chariots. Go deal with it. It's your problem. I conquered the whole land before you. The rest of it's yours. You have a responsibility to go and take this land and deal with the Canaanites. And the fact that they don't is part of their problem. That's going to be the issue that we will deal with extensively in chapter 18, and then at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, is the fact that Yeshua is constantly pushing them to go and settle their different tribal regions, and they're hesitant. They're not going as quickly as Yeshua would like. They're not going as quickly as God would like. This is part of their problem.
So is the issue that they're being pushed too much, or is the issue that they're...
they haven't been pushed enough. They've been too comfortable.
But that's his, but it's not to be given without having to 100%.
They've been sitting around the Gilgal, around the area of Gilgal, and you of course know what Gilgal is. Right? They've been sitting around Gilgal for 7+ years, probably by now 10 or 12 years. And Yeshua's looking.
But is it Yeshua's fault?
It's not Yeshua's fault. I don't believe you can blame Yeshua. I think that's part of the mandate.
Maybe they didn't
that maybe they didn't feel strong enough. Maybe they felt they were not as strong as everybody said they were.
Okay. Postscript.
But is it a prime and the national, or is it all the Shvat?
Well, it's going to increase in significance as we go further through the Shvatim. What we've seen already are little isolated enclaves. What we've seen is Yerushalayim was not conquered, and we've seen is the area of Gezer wasn't conquered, and we've seen regions. What we've seen are little enclaves, and as the stories progress, we find more and more areas that the tribes are unable to or unwilling to deal with. When we get into chapter 18 and 19, we'll find that suddenly this whole thing is an all-blown-out explosion. So it depends on the tribes. The text goes through the Shvatim in decreasing order of commitment. We started with Yehuda, runs right to their territory, Kalev wants his land, they go out, they take the entire south. From Yehuda we went to Ephraim and Binyamin, and Ephraim and Menashe. We haven't gotten to Binyamin yet, but Ephraim and Menashe. And now we're dealing with a little bit of the problems of Ephraim and Menashe. We'll get to, at the end of the next chapter, we'll get to all of the other tribes, Naphtali and Yisachar and Asher and Zvulun and Dan, etc. And the problems will increase in magnitude as we progress. But this is the beginning of the issue. Come to Yeshua and complain. Yeshua says, Gesundheit, I'll give you a whole new section of land. How about we can't deal with the chariots? You can't deal with what? Amravata. Your problem is your solution. Go deal with the chariots. That's exactly what he pushes them to do.
And I don't understand. Maybe these tribes really didn't feel as strong as everybody's telling them that they are. Maybe they didn't feel strong enough.
Fine, so that's still their responsibility. That means that they're falling short of what their mandate is to do. The whole point of the conquest of the Canaan, either they did do what the Torah tells them to do or they didn't, but ultimately they are accountable for their actions and whatever fallout it will have. In 2 minutes, let me just give you a glimpse at the fallout of this story. The fallout of this story is essentially, what did Yehoshua do here? Is he took a section of Shevet Ephraim and he put them in the area of Ya'ar Ephraim, which is essentially section of Ephraim. Manasseh's there already. I don't have to worry about Manasseh. Yeah. Took a section of Ephraim.
He broadened it.
And he put them, if Atzlacha Har Ephraim, if Har Ephraim is too small for you, then here is the Ya'ar, Ya'ar Ephraim. But Ya'ar Ephraim is in the area of the Gilad, which is essentially the territorial tribe of Menashe. Why is that an issue? This will become a major issue 300 years later. Because now, over the course of time, Ephraimites are settling where? Are settling in the area of the Gilad. So I'll give you a glimpse. I'll give you a glimpse. One of the bloodiest civil wars in early biblical period is in Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim actually has three civil wars. But one of the worst is the story of Yiftach. Remember Yiftach? You ever learned Yiftach? We're going to get to Yiftach when we do Shoftim. Shoftim is a very, very interesting sefer. Yiftach is famous. But he's famous for the wrong reasons. He's famous because... You ever heard the name? Jephthah?
I've heard the name.
Heard the name, Yiftach.
Yeah, I don't remember.
He's famous because somebody wrote a book called Jephthah's Daughters. Mm-hmm. Or Jephthah's Daughter. He was famous because of the oath that he supposedly took, in which ended up sacrificing his daughter. Right? Whole famous stuff. That's what made him famous. Actually, that's
it's
the least...
Story.
It's a terrible story. But that's the least of the problem. But that's the least of the problem. Right? The fact that the fact of his oath and the sacrifice of his daughter is actually the least significant part of the problems of Yiftach. The bigger problem of Yiftach is the civil war which destroyed over 40,000 people. And a bloody civil war that had absolutely no... It was a massacre. And I'll show you where it is. If you take a look in Shoftim Perek Yudbet... Pasuk Dalet. The justification for this war is very strange. Yiftach goes to battle against the Midianites. He's victorious in his battle against Ammon and Moab, and then the Bnei Ephraim come to him and they said to him, Yiftach, how come you didn't call us to help you fight this battle? We would have been happy to help. And Yiftach is so angry by their request that he says, I'm going to destroy you. It's a very strange dialogue. But take a look in Pasuk Dalet. Vayikbotz Yiftach et kol anshei Gilad Vayilachem et Ephraim. Yiftach comes from the Gilad, Yiftach ha-Giladi. Yiftach gathers together all the people of Gilad, and they go to war against Ephraim. Vayaku anshei Gilad et Ephraim. And the people of Gilad kill the people of Ephraim. Ki amru plitei Ephraim atem Gilad betoch Ephraim betoch Menashe. For they said, remnants of Ephraim are you, Gilad, amidst Ephraim, amidst Menashe. One of the most ambiguous phrases in Tanakh, Sensino, I don't have a Sensino Tanakh here. Sensino has a commentary in the bottom, the footnote, that says, modern scholars have given up trying to interpret this verse. It's a wild statement. But I'll come back to it. Vayilkod Gilad et Mabot Yarden Ephraim. Gilad captured the crosses over the Jordan of Ephraim. When the remnants of Ephraim tried to cross the Jordan, they would say to these remnants of Ephraim, are you from Ephraim? And they would say no. They would give him a test, because evidently Ephraimites spoke with a particular lingo. They would say to them, tell me, pronounce the word shibolet. And they would pronounce it as sibolet. And then they couldn't pronounce Shibolet. So they would capture these people. That's how they knew that they were from Ephraim. And they slaughtered them. That's the language of the text. They slaughtered them. They slaughtered 42,000 Ephraimites. It was a bloodbath. That's what Yiftach is responsible for. Yiftach's daughter is the least of the problem. This is the real tragedy of the story of Yiftach. All because of a war between Gilad and Ephraim. And this mysterious verse that says, why did they kill them? Why did they capture them? Because they said, Plitei Ephraim atem Gilad betoch Ephraim betoch Menashe. The Mefarshim, I'm going to have to stop here because we've run out of time. But let me just tell you, in brief, the commentaries deliberate over two issues. What does Plitei Ephraim mean? And number two, who said this? Is it the Bnei Ephraim? Most of the Mefarshim say Bnei Ephraim would taunt the Bnei Gilad, and so Bnei Gilad had enough of it, so they crossed over the Jordan and fought Bnei Ephraim and Har Ephraim. Or, what I'm suggesting to you is that these Bnei Ephraim are not in the territorial region of Ephraim. These Bnei Ephraim are the Plitei Ephraim. They're the remnants of Ephraim who are living where? Who are living in the area of the Gilad, in Yar Ephraim, where Yoshua put them. And for 250 years, Bnei Menashe have resented these Ephraimites living in their territory. And Yiftach gathers the Gilad people together, and in a completely unrelated battle, the moment he has enough power and enough strength to put a stop to a 250-year-old scourge on their land, namely the Ephraimites in the area of the Gilad, where Yoshua put them.
Doesn't seem to be too fair.
42,000 was a bloodbath. And the fact that Tanakh describes it as a shechita,
and not only that, only because they pronounced the word the wrong way.
No, that's just a test. That was just a test. How?
But what if they had said it the right way? They would have been saved.
That's just a disguise. It was a disguise of who's Ephraim and who's not Ephraim. But the source of the enmity comes from here.